Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another weekly Auto Central show, South Africa's number one motoring podcast powered by Auto Trader. And I am your host, George Meany, and I have my co-anchor in the studio with me, Wandile Sishi. How's it going, Wandy?
Good, George. Yeah, I'm in the house again. Every single time we come back, it just looks better and better and better and better. And who knows, maybe we'll be shooting on the moon soon. Or like, I don't know, a track, an F1 race, if the budget allows.
You're quite the poet, maybe, who knows. But just a reminder to everybody listening that our podcast is weekly and it drops on Mondays at 9 a.m. on cliffcentral.com. But if you want to join anytime and you want to just subscribe, you can subscribe to our podcast on your favorite player that is across YouTube. You can watch our show or you can listen on any of the podcast hosts, yeah. iTunes.
I'm a fan of Spotify. That's my preferred
place of choice. Auto Trader makes it available everywhere as South Africa's leading automotive marketplace and now South Africa's leading automotive podcast. You know, we try and make it better all the time.
Every time. I think people want the best, so we're going to give them the best.
Exactly. So what are we talking about today, Wandy?
Is buying a car still necessary? Like, it's a very open-ended question, and I know that we're in the motoring space, but realistically speaking, post-COVID South Africa, is buying a car still necessary?
Well, I mean, cars do give, you know, you the ultimate PPE when you travel, right? I mean, when I get in my car, I'm safe, and the only safer place to be is inside a Tesla with the anti-apocalypse mode or whatever it's called.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's the ultimate PPE thing for traveling. So maybe there's two sides to that because, I mean, you're young. You're you're a millennial.
I think I'm young. I tell myself I'm still young, but, you know, some people tell me otherwise. But I completely agree with you. So before we get into is buying a car still necessary, I think we must first touch base on, is a car still necessary? And the big answer to that is a huge yes, like a resounding yes, I think.
Well, is that specific to South Africa or do you think it's like everywhere?
I think everywhere. Not necessarily a car, but some mode of transport is. And because of the South African conditions, owning a car or having access whenever you need a car is a huge, huge advantage. And I think it gives you more than just freedom. It gives you options.
Yeah.
Whereas in other countries, maybe a car is not, you know, the best option. Maybe public transport is, but in South Africa, I think a car is very necessary.
Just because of the lack of public transport. I mean, I think that's one huge deal.
Huge.
It's huge. I mean, the fact that we can't just go and jump on a train from X to Y. I mean, we've got the Gautrain, but that only covers Gauteng and a couple
and
of routes.
Very small. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's one of the biggest challenges with it. And then on top of that, I think having a car, it's not just for like work or leisure or anything. I think it gives you options to do a lot more. If you want to go on holiday, for instance, if there's an emergency, for instance, there's so many things that owning a car does provide you. But to the topic, is buying a car still necessary? And I think that's something that a lot of people are asking themselves.
Let's take those two parts that you're talking about. The one is, do we need cars in South Africa? Yes, we do. I suppose that's what you're saying, right? Do you need to actually outright own the car? Maybe that's questionable.
And I think it depends on who you are. So why do you need a car? Like, I think you need to ask yourself, what am I going to be using this vehicle for?
Yeah.
At what time am I going to be using it for? Am I going to have any passengers? Do I need to go get groceries? Or everything I need around me close enough? If you can start answering these questions, you can start understanding what's the best option for you. Because obviously, you know, at Auto Trader, we advocate for purchasing cars, but at the same time, we're also advocates of people, and we're trying to give people answers to life questions, right? To better them.
Well, I mean, I suppose in the in that scenario that you unpack, the future of car ownership is that businesses own cars and consumers don't necessarily own the cars, and the businesses then rent the cars out to people. Yeah. It doesn't mean that they won't be buying and selling of cars. It just means that this world of B2C It could be questionable in the future, and it could be, you know, a B2B car buying and selling future rather than a business to consumer. If you don't know what B2C stands for, it's business to consumer, and B2B is business to business. And then consumers merely just rent what they need.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. So I think, and also it's very different if you're considering a new versus used, right? If you're buying, or if you're looking to own a car, used is hands down.
How long is a car new?
Not very long, right? It's like, I'd say about a year and a half to 2 years.
Some people might argue that a car is new for as long as the first owner owns it. But I don't know. You know, a car is new. Is a car new for as long as you smell the new smell?
It could be. That could be one of the reasons. But I mean, actually, you did an article where you talked about nearly new. Yes. Right? And that was up to, what, 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like it's more of a guesstimate, you know. Yeah. Nearly new could be 3. You know, what if you bought a car that you might think might be a classic, and you stuck it in plastic somewhere inside a garage, and it's 20 years old? Is that still nearly new?
Ew, I actually have no idea. Yeah, she got me with that one. Honestly, I don't know. I think it's still new. If the mileage is still zero, or like
really so, is new mileage dependent?
To me, it is at least. Okay. I would say a new car must be less than like 10,000 kilos. Okay. That's to the point. So I think it depends. If you're looking to own a car, used is always best. But if you're looking for a new car, that's where it gets tricky. And I think that's where these new options and these new sort of services coming up of car leasing seems like a really great idea.
Yeah.
And it's something that personally I would definitely consider. Like if a new car came out and I was so compelled to buy it, I don't think I'd be able to afford it. So I'd just lease it.
Well, I mean, a couple of entities have gotten into the space, right? A crowd by the name of Why Buy Cars.
Yeah.
Another crowd by the name of Eco Car Hire. Mm. And then WesBank's doing something interesting here as well, which I'm sure that other banks will follow, like Standard Bank and APSA. Sure. You know, so you can rent a car, properly rent. I mean, I think the leasing options that we have in the market today are really just creative buying.
Proper
rentals, you know. And if you go and rent a car from the rental companies, it's going to be expensive. I mean, there you're paying a couple of R100 a day.
You know,
whereas some of these guys have got cars in the market for as little as R4,500 a month.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer, right? If you're in that space, but I don't know. Like everything I've read, they haven't given me all the information. Like, what do they require from me? Do I have to have a license for like 5 years, for instance? You know, these are the sort of things that they don't tell you.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to see, because I don't know anybody who's doing this yet. And I think all these guys are kind of trialing this out.
Yeah.
And using the base of all the popularity of like Uber and stuff as like a reference that people might actually take this up.
Well, you know, and I mean, talking about that, it's like if car ownership is not necessary, but car, and it makes me think we're moving into a world of car usership rather than car ownership. And I think I spoke about that a little while ago in one of the pieces we wrote. Car usership can be anything. It doesn't mean that you don't have a car standing in your driveway. It just means you're using the car and someone else has title to that car.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's what we're talking about. Is that the future of cars?
Yeah, well, I think ego has been taken a lot out of car ownership. I don't think people like...
Have you been to the East Rand?
I was actually when I think about it, no, I'm sticking to it. I think ego, for a large part of South Africans, especially the young South Africans, have kind of taken that aspect out of it. I don't think anyone's going to be like, yo, you know, show me your papers. How long have you owned this? How much have you paid the bank to get this? It's more so if it's there and if it serves its purpose the way you want it. But there are still disadvantages, right, to car leasing.
No, there are many disadvantages to car leasing. I mean, you don't own the car. How you treat the car probably will come back and bite you.
Yeah.
Insurance might be higher. I don't know.
I'm sure it's much higher. The liability... must be insane. If I owned a car leasing service, I would be scared.
You take the risk, you know. you take the risk. So getting on to e-hailing services then, is that not then the option is rent it when you need it with another driver?
I think where e-hailing ends is when there's an emergency or a weird time or a weird place. Yeah. And in South Africa, those are things that we really consider a lot. And I think that's kind of the limitations of e-hailing services, is the safety and the access to something.
Well, I suppose what you're paying for there is you're paying for use at any moment.
Mm.
You're paying for that emergency use, the car standing in your garage or in your driveway at 2 o'clock in the morning and, somebody falls over and needs to go to hospital and you don't have to wait for an ambulance. You can drive there.
Yeah. It's late and I want to go get a pizza or something at like 9 p.m.
Yeah.
You don't want to call it Uber at 9 to go get a pizza. It's kind of like, whoa, dude.
Well, in the times of COVID, I don't know if I want to get into a car at 9 o'clock when I don't know who's just been in that car.
Exactly. Right.
Ultimate PPE.
Ultimate PPE.
Yeah.
It serves many purposes, and I think that's where kind of e-hailing ends.
Yeah.
Is that kind of aspect, which is sad, but,
So why is owning better?
I think for a lot of reasons. For me, so personally, on my car, I have a stripe on the side of my car.
Is your car pimped?
It's not. That's the only thing I've added, and I swear it's given me like an extra like 5 horsepower. I promise. I promise you, just that stripe.
You're from the East Rand.
I'm not. No, I'm not. But those are the personalizing aspect of like owning a car is very appealing to me. It does make it very personal. So, that's one big advantage of owning a car.
Everybody, Wendy's got stripes, racing stripes down the side of his car. But what about paying less over the long term? I mean, when you own a car, do you pay less over the long term, do you think?
Well, with inflation and stuff, I think you would. Like your initial cost of purchase is going to be higher at the very beginning than later on.
Yeah.
I think for everything, any sort of long-term purchase, that's kind of one of the big benefits of owning it. And then on top of that, once you're kind of over it, you can sell it. So you don't completely lose everything. Whereas with car leasing, you never own the car. It's
a usage thing.
Mm.
Yeah. You're just paying to rent it.
Yeah.
But, so you got to ask yourself, this is my belief. This is my own personal belief. If you have to finance something, whether it be a house, a car, or anything for that matter, when you have to finance it, you actually don't own it.
Yeah.
You're renting it.
Pretty much.
You are renting it.
Rent to own, at least.
Well, you're renting money.
Yeah.
That's what you're renting. I mean, what do you think interest is? Interest is renting money.
It's pretty much renting money. Yeah.
So you're not actually, you don't own the car because the bank has title.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the first kind of principle. The second thing is you're paying rent on the money.
Yeah, which is the interest.
Yes, which is the interest. And then over the long term, you're actually paying more to use that car because you're losing on the depreciation, plus you're paying the interest on the money, right?
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about that. I think that's a very like hardcore way of like thinking about things.
I'm hardcore.
I must be. I think it's
from the East Rand.
From the perspective of car leasing versus car ownership, I still think car ownership is better just for the long term effect of something. And I'm very close to my car and like cars in general. So
but you're paying the bank rent.
It doesn't matter. The value is more than just the money that I give out.
Okay.
It's the value of the car.
Yeah.
Weighs a lot more and means a lot more than how much I'm spending.
I mean, you spoke about that emotional attachment there. Yeah. Isn't that an emotional attachment though?
It is completely. Yeah. But I mean, the monetary value is set. That's never going to change. Doesn't matter how long I own the car or how long my agreement is with the bank.
But you're still renting.
I'm still renting, yes. But the emotional value of it is a lot higher.
Because there's this perception that you actually own the car.
Why do you hate this so much?
I don't. I'm just debating with you.
Why would you let me have this?
I mean, you can have it. Of course you can have it. No. I mean, at the end of the day, we are all emotional human beings. And we do get passionately attached to objects.
Mm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way the world's built. It's just I think for too long the society has preached to us that you've got to own a car, you've got to own a house, and the only way to do that is to go to the bank. You know, so you know, I'm just highlighting the fact that, you know, renting or leasing is maybe no different.
Okay, that's one way to look at it.
Financing, you know, and you can still be passionate about the car.
Is it that you can quickly change it up after 3 months?
Well, you can't put racing stripes on the side, so maybe there's where you win, and I'll give you that one.
Yeah, that's important. You gotta have the stripes.
You gotta have the stripes. You don't drop the suspension, whereas on a rented car you can't.
Exactly.
You can do donuts and don't get caught because you will end up with a hefty fine. Don't do donuts. So don't not get caught. Don't do donuts. Either way, you're gonna probably pay for the car because rental companies or leasing companies are going to build the cost into the car, right?
Yeah, they have to make money somehow.
Yeah,
I think it's. You know, to kind of summarize, it depends on your current situation.
Yes.
What's your usage?
Yeah.
And what's your preference?
Exactly.
I don't think there's one right answer.
Well, let's move on from that. And today we're gonna bring one of our expert journalists onto the show, and he is none other than Lawrence Meany. And Lawrence is going to talk to us about the new Land Rover Defender.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this vehicle. I mean, when I saw it, when I saw this thing, I think it was, you know, it's probably the most stunning SUV I've seen in a really long time. And I hope Lawrence doesn't break my heart. But I'm interested to see what he thought about it.
Well, Lawrence has just joined us. How's it, Lawrence?
How's it, gents?
Hey, Lawrence.
And Lawrence Meany is no relation to me, except we're in the same family of Auto Trader. And one of our expert journalists that, gets to do what he's passionate about every day, and that is drive cars. So tell us, Lawrence, this new Land Rover Defender. Now, I mean, I'm a Land Rover fan. A lot of my friends are not. Land Rover fans, where they joke with me because, they ask me if under my garage there is an oil refinery. But I'll give them that one. But is this a real Land Rover Defender? That's the first question.
Okay, well, it depends entirely on who you ask. If you were to ask one of the older Land Rover purists, those guys who make jokes about the oil leaks and stains, they would say absolutely not. I think if you were to ask somebody who's new to the brand, who is only now beginning to get into the whole Land Rover thing, they would say absolutely, yes, it is. This is not the old Defender. The old Defender was that ladder frame chassis, aluminium box with you could fix with a Leatherman and a piece of baling wire.
Yeah, well, there's benefits to that, no, right? There's benefit to being able to fix a car with a piece of wire.
Well, and that goes to the second part of what I was going to say is, if you were to take the old Land Rover Defender and you were to head out into the bush, 300 kilometers from the nearest garage, and something went wrong, yes, you would, with your little toolkit and a few little bits and pieces and maybe a stick off the side of the road, you'd be able to fix the car and get back to where you were going.
Yeah, with this new Defender, it doesn't even break.
If that happened with this new one, you would be well and truly scuppered. There is no way you are going anywhere. You're going to have to get a rollback to come and fetch you.
Yeah, but that wouldn't happen, though. This is the new Defender that's, like, new and improved. That wouldn't even happen, right? Like, that's my belief.
Well, I don't know about die-hard, kind of like real bush-whacking people, you know. Might not think the same way, right, Lawrence?
So I have had in the past, I've had my disagreements with the electrical systems on many of Jaguar Land Rover's products. And that's why I would say, yes, you can go and off-road and 4x4 with this thing to your heart's content. Yeah. Just make sure you're not too far away from civilization. Because if something does go wrong, it's going to go wrong in a big way.
Wow. So if you, okay, I have a question. So let's just say I did buy this new Defender, right? Thinking that, you know, from the history of what the Defender brand is this going to be as capable, and would I have to be worried about like chipping the paint? Like how much is it to repair something like that on this new Defender? Is it built for that?
And that's the thing, Wandi. This car is it's a luxury SUV, where the old one was more like a farm tractor. Mm. You know, if something went wrong, you were just like, oh well, doesn't matter. Yeah. With this new one, I think you'd be slightly less inclined to put it in harm's way.
Yeah.
You know, I did some serious rock climbing and dune climbing and stuff with the vehicle when I had it, and it's heavily, heavily capable, and it's absolutely, you know, you can do all of the things that it says it does on the tin. But whether you would want to is debatable, because I think, yeah, if you damage something on this car, it's not just a quick fix. You know, the old Defenders were white. You could fix it with some Tippex. It wasn't a problem, you know.
Well, I don't know about white. Weren't they that, like, off-white, like brown vomit color?
Ivory, yeah, they came in three shades of white.
Ivory, yeah.
Depending on how close you live to Red Sand.
Ivory Tippex. What color are your racing stripes?
They're black. Yeah, it's a white car with a black stripe.
Ah, we were talking about one of these racing stripes on his car. Anyway, who are the competitors to this car, Lawrence?
All right, so the Land Rover Defender, the new one, sits very much in the middle between the Toyota Land Cruiser Prado and the Jeep Wrangler. The Jeep Wrangler is the cheap end, and that represents the capabilities of the vehicle. The Prado, the luxury side of things with the leather seats and the aircon and the, you know, cooled drinks container between the seats, that kind of thing. And yeah, the new Defender is a bit of both. It has the rugged capability and yet still manages to have this air of luxuriousness about it.
And well, I mean, that brings up something in my mind, and that is, you know, isn't this going to make the Jeep Wrangler more popular? Because Land Rover's now moved away from that box, rugged kind of, you know, fix it with a piece of wire and duct tape sort of scenario. Whereas the Jeep Wrangler now is the only one of the only, because I suppose you can still go for the Suzuki, but Jeep Wrangler is one of the only like modular type cars left. Yeah.
The Wrangler is yes. I think you'd be a little bit more inclined to throw it around and dunk it in a mud puddle and ram it into a tree, and you wouldn't care too much, because you could take the doors off and you could take the roof off, and if you really felt like it, you could take the fenders off. And I don't know if it's going to supplant the Defender, because people who love the green oval will love the green oval for life. They're Defender heads, you know.
Well, I mean, I must be honest. Driving a Land Rover is, I don't know about this one, but, you know, driving my Land Rover is like driving a couch.
Yeah, super comfortable.
It is. It really is. This car is supremely comfortable. I mean, it rides on air suspension, where the old one was springs and solid axles and ladder frame. This thing is now, it's a luxury SUV that just so happens to be able to climb a 40-degree incline covered with rocks and sand.
Can't the Land Rover, or should I say Range Rover, can't they do the same thing?
They can, but they're not designed to. You know, your,
so what's
things
difference
like
in this design?
Your Discovery is running around on 22-inch wheels, where, you know, just the slightest off the track and you're going to have gouges in your tires or your rubber bands, if you want to call them that. The Defender runs on 19s, but it has a very, very high tire profile. Uh-huh. And of course, air suspension, 291 mils, which you can, you know, standard raise. Driving height is 245, and you can raise the car even higher. Okay, you can drive through a meter of water, a meter deep river. So
you were talking about the interior a little bit. What is the interior of this Defender like?
It is plastic, but not that cheap, nasty Chinese plastic, you know.
Wasn't the old Defender also plastic?
Yeah. Actually,
no.
Thank you.
No, it was actually, surprisingly enough, wood and carpet.
Damn, okay. That's a lot.
Yes,
that's a proper car.
The center console was made out of plywood with carpet over it. Mm. The new one, so the floor, the seat bases, the dashboard, the steering wheel, the door cards, basically everything that's like a touch surface is plastic. And then wherever you would rest your elbows or your hands is like a soft neoprene, squishy kind of rubber.
Mm.
So really, the only electrical part that you would see from the inside of the car is the screens. So the center one in the center console and the driver's binnacle. If it wasn't for those, I bet you could probably climb in there with a pressure washer and just wash all the mud out. The seats are covered in like this, I want to say almost like a tweed cloth.
Yeah.
So very, very hardy interior that looks like it can take a licking, you know.
Okay. And the price, what does this thing go for?
Well, that's where the wheels kind of fall off the bus.
The 19-inch.
Base price, without any options, without any of the accessory packs or any of the lifestyle accessories that you can buy for this thing, 1.242 million rand.
Yeah, and you're never going to get it like base, right? That's like, it's
that's where it starts, and then you can add like the adventure pack for 55 grand, and you can add the onboard compressor for another 28. You can have
fully loaded. What are we talking about?
Fully loaded, I think you could probably be in all in for about 1.3 million for a really nice one, like the one that we tested with the full adventure pack with the compressor and all the accessories.
It's not too bad in relation to, you know, competitors.
Let's move on because we're running out of time for the Land Rover Defender. And, you know, there are 22 on autotrader.co.za if you want to go and have a look. But very finally, Lawrence, your rank out of 10.
I am going to give it, just on its capability alone and what I was able to do with the vehicle when I had it, an 8.5.
There we go. 8.5. Wendy's happy with that. 8.5 out of 10. I think that's the highest score we've got to date.
That is the highest score. So, yeah, we'll have you back soon, Lawrence, because your scoring is nice.
Well, there you have it. Lawrence Meany, our very, very qualified journalist that drives cars for a living. Thank you very much, Lawrence, and thanks for joining.
Always a pleasure. See you next time, gents.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Ciao. Well, there you go. Lawrence Meany on the new Land Rover Defender.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
You're a fan. I mean, I've been a Land Rover fan for a long time, you know, and mainly because of the air suspension, to be honest. Yeah. Air suspension is what sells me. Well, very quickly, let's get to some questions, Wandy. What is the first one?
So this is a really good question that I don't think we think about enough, but what type of car should a disabled person drive?
Interesting question.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't know this. So this could be really interesting for a family member or yourself.
Well, I mean, first of all, I would imagine it depends on the disability.
Yeah, 100%.
It depends on the disability. And but I would imagine that any disability would benefit from an automatic gearbox first up.
Yeah.
You want to think about less when you're driving. I mean, I want to think about less. And
I mean, I have an automatic and like, it's great. I don't like, okay, you know what? Let me not start a war on the manual versus auto.
You're from the East Rand.
Well, I have some friends who would
from the East Rand.
Yeah. So
you got racing stripes, but you got to drive an automatic.
I have to, you know, I have to blend in.
And then a pimped soft car. Anyway, but automatic. I think automatic is the definitely the way to go if you have physical disability of any kind, and you know. And then I think you've got to think about ride height or height, because getting in and out of a too low a car could be challenging. Getting in and out of a too high a car could be challenging as well.
Yeah.
You know, so what about ride height?
Yeah. It has to be just right to whatever you need, your requirements. Mm. But yeah, I know that there's a few companies out there that can assist you in transferring your car into whatever capabilities or disabilities that you kind of are, you know, have.
Yeah.
So just research.
Just do some research. Yeah. I mean, they do modify cars quite extensively. So I think those are the two immediate things you can think of, and that is automatic gearbox and ride height. Also, you know, lots of adjustments, I suppose, are useful. You know, like can you adjust the steering height? Can you adjust the steering reach? Those are important as well. You know, there's some cars that don't come with, they come with steering height adjustment, but they don't come with steering reach adjustment. And that could be an important one as well.
Yeah, there's a really interesting article on the site that, you know, kind of really gets into different kind of disabilities, which I think if you're looking for a vehicle, if you have a disability, I think that article will give you a lot of insights.
Well, who asked this question?
So this question was by Moonstone 2500. So.
Okay, well, Moonstone 2500, go on to autotrader.co.za and go and have a look at one of the articles we wrote. What type of car should a disabled person drive? And you should get some more answers than what we can give you there. Next question there, Wandy.
Okay, next question is from Kiletso, and she asked, what are the critical issues that the insurance companies look for when a person does an insurance claim?
Interesting stuff. Okay, I mean, I would think that first off the bat, insurance companies first going to look for reasons why they shouldn't pay.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point.
You know,
or how much they let's put a positive spin. How much they are able to pay you based on?
Well, I suppose what they're looking for is to get the proof that they are liable to pay. Let's not say looking for reasons not to pay, because I'm sure there are many insurance companies out there who, you know, they'll stick to their word and they'll pay. They're not looking for reasons not to pay. They're just looking for proof.
Not to be robbed, basically.
Not to be robbed. Yeah, they're a business as well. They don't want to be robbed either. So they're going to look for reasons that give them the legal grounds to pay you the insurance claim, and other things they're going to look for are roadworthiness of the vehicle. Was the vehicle roadworthy at the time of the accident or incident or I suppose theft? You're not going to tell, right? whether the vehicle's license was up to date, and whether the person driving, this is an important one, whether that the person driving was authorized to drive the vehicle. Yeah. And I mean, all of these are valid reasons not to pay an insurance claim, because they're in your contract. And whether the driver has a valid driver's license, don't forget that, I don't think. Mm. And then were you negligent?
That's the one that they're always trying to, I think that's the big one where you said reasons not to pay.
Yes.
That's, because let's be honest, a lot of accidents are based on just negligence. Yeah. I think more than anything, don't be in a situation where you have to make an insurance claim.
Yeah.
And when you do, you know, ensure that's not your fault.
So I would say, invest in a dash cam.
Yeah. I need to do the same.
Invest in dash cam because there's nothing like that. That video footage can kind of corroborate your story, and then there don't have to be that many questions asked. And finally, Wandy, last question.
Okay, this is a really good question and something that's come up before. What's the problem with South African petrol? So, for context, Stroller, the person who asked this question, essentially saw that the Fiesta ST, I think the 2018 model, was not coming to South Africa, and the response from Ford was because of poor fuel quality.
Yeah.
In their words. So what does that mean? Because I mean, we have high end vehicles which work fine here. So what's the issue with our fuel?
Well, if I have to think about the Ford Fiesta ST, it's a high performance vehicle.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the link. You know, I don't know exactly, but maybe that's the link. And what is wrong with our fuel? Many people say that our fuel works just fine. Well, I mean, if we were to just look at this a little bit objectively, our service stations go up to about 95 octane.
Yeah.
Whereas some cars would prefer to run a 98 octane. So maybe octane is a problem.
I think
for these
most
high performance
cars, prefer
higher octane.
98, yeah.
Yeah. So we get up to 95 octane, and
so it's not necessarily that our fuel is not great. It's just the OEMs recommend a higher octane to get the best performance out of the vehicle.
Exactly.
And they're not going to give you less performance just because of fuel quality. Rather,
well, there's other things that could be playing a role here, and that is believe that our fuel has a high alcohol content.
higher than the rest of the world?
Don't know. I mean, you know, it's not very beneficial if fuel has a high alcohol content for the engine. So that could be one. And then the distribution network is not necessarily consistent. You know, in smaller towns, I think we spoke about this last time. Yeah. In smaller towns, fuel is dispensed from above the ground tanks.
Yeah.
Now those heat up.
Yeah.
You know, and because the old, you know,
it's a reaction, right?
Pitsonervater, it is a real town, or hot as hell, might not get as much traffic. Yeah. How long does that fuel stand in those tanks and deteriorate? Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's the major reason, but I think it's back down to what you said in the beginning, that is performance related. I want to get the best performance out of the car. And, you know, some might tout that we have an inconsistent fuel supply. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I'm kind of on the fence of, I think it's just a reason not to bring, I don't think there's anything wrong with our fuel. Like, I think it's just the OEMs don't want to bring the vehicle here because of plenty of reasons. Maybe they did a study and they saw that
electric future
is not there, or electric future, or there's so many things that could be in play. And I think that's kind of a scapegoat. But yeah. Just know that South Africa sometimes gets cars that other nations don't get.
That's so very true.
It's just kind of.
We've got a lot of cars here. I mean, we've got thousands of variants. You know, we've literally got almost 60 brands in South Africa, with hundreds of variants. You say thousands of variants with hundreds of variants, and so as Wandi says, there are many cars in South Africa that actually don't get distributed to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
But that's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. And that is myself, George Meany, your host, and joined by Wandile Sishi. And see you next time, Wandi.
Sounds good.
Ciao, ciao.